Hey there, and welcome back to Nature Boost. I'm Jill Pritchard with the Missouri Department of Conservation. If you've lived in the central or eastern U.S., you know this sound. That famous cicada call has been the theme song to most of our summers. I remember marveling as a kid finding their shed skin on the ground or on the trunk of a tree. 2024 brings the great cicada emergence, with periodicals tunneling to the surface after spending 13 years underground. The life cycle of these insects is so fascinating, and I wanted to learn more about them before they emerge in the coming weeks. So I was really thrilled whenever I was able to sit down with MDC forest entomologist Robbie Deerhoff to learn more.
Or they live underground.
What is a cicada?
So a cicada is a general term for a pretty common group of insects that we see in Missouri. And they're really neat because part of their life cycle is underground and then part of it's above ground. So just something that we see. They sing. They're really neat insects to see in the summertime.
Are cicadas the same as locusts?
Ooh, that's a good question, because when I was growing up, I always called them locusts, but no, they're not the same. Locust is really a term that we should reserve for grasshoppers, or some people in different parts of the world, maybe even katydids, but in general, locust is not the right term for cicada, and some people even call cicadas jar flies, and the Latin cicada actually means tree cricket.
Okay, interesting. I'm glad that you said that, because I've always heard people like use cicada and locust interchangeably, but that's not the case.
Right. Nope, that's not the case, although that is something that we commonly say, but that's just not the proper scientific term.
So cicadas are huge in the news this year because we are going to have the periodical cicadas emerge, correct?
Yep, that's correct. So every year we see the annual cicadas, which actually most of them have a 2 to 5 year life cycle. But these periodical cicadas, we only see those every 13 to 17 years, depending on which brood.
The brood that we're seeing is the 13-year one?
Yep. So it's brood 19, and it's made up of 4 13-year species.
When in the year do they start to emerge?
Yep, that's a great question. So insects are dictated, their life cycle is dictated by temperature. And for cicadas being underground, they're relying on soil temperature to kind of tell them, you know, when it's time to come out. And for periodical cicadas, it's known that when the soils at 8 inches deep reach 64 degrees Fahrenheit, that's about the time that they will start to emerge. And so for us above ground, that generally equates to when iris bloom. So if you know what iris are, then once they start to open up their blooms, then expect that you'll be seeing periodical cicadas very soon.
Interesting. Iris blooming can be a sign of when they'll come out.
Right. Yep. So we call these phenological indicators. So when plants are also dictated by temperature. So when they start blooming, different plants bloom at different times throughout the spring, and that's all based off of temperature. So we know that certain things in the insect world happen at certain times when plants are doing their thing too. And we can kind of correlate those because it all relates back to temperature.
Tell us briefly about their life cycle, because it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So it is interesting, but it's also simple. So cicadas the females lay eggs, and then those eggs hatch into nymphs, and then the nymphs are in the ground for whatever amount of time that is appropriate for that species. And then they come out of the ground. They usually crawl up on something high, like a tree or a shrub. And then the back of their exoskeleton splits open as they molt that original nymphal exoskeleton. And they emerge as an adult, and they pump their wings full of hemolymph to open them up. They dry, and then they go about their adult business of singing and mating, feeding a little bit, and then they die. That's the shortest part of their life cycle, probably, is the adult phase. And after they mate and lay eggs, then that's the end for them, and the cycle starts over.
these cicadas are underground and alive that whole time?
Yep, exactly. So the female cicada, she actually lays eggs into small diameter twigs. So twigs that are about the size of your pinky finger. She'll cut little slits in those twigs and she'll lay eggs in there. And then those eggs will hatch into tiny little nymphs that feed a little bit on the xylem of that tree before dropping to the ground. And then they'll burrow into the ground fairly deep. I've seen them, you know, 2 to 3 feet deep in the ground before. But they'll actually, when they're real tiny, they'll find grass roots or other fine roots to attach to and feed the xylem material from those roots. And then as they get larger through the years, then they'll find larger roots, usually tree roots, to feed on. But yeah, it all starts as a little teeny tiny egg and then nymphs that grow bigger and bigger over time. And as many as 98% of those tiny nymphs will die in the first couple of years. So what we see emerge 13 or 17 years later, it's estimated is maybe only 2% of what eggs were originally laid. Most of them die before they even reach 13 or 17 years in adulthood.
And why do you think they die before they're able to reemerge again? Is it just there's not enough food source for them down there?
You know, there's a variety of reasons this could happen. You know, some probably become mole food or other, you know, soil burrowing animals and insects, predators that will eat them. Some of it may be because of temperature or desiccations, you know, drying out. You know, maybe we have a drought and it's just too dry in the upper layers of soil. Some of it could be from habitat loss or pesticide use in a lawn. So if you're using insecticides in your lawn, you might be inadvertently killing things like this. They're really cool. But yeah, habitat loss as we, you know, deforest places around cities to pave over or build houses, then the cicadas are not going to survive in those areas. And they don't move long distances. So they, you know, won't be able to find a new place. So there's lots of reasons why in 13 or 17 years they may die.
That's a long time for something to happen. You know, that's a long span of time. We have in Missouri, been experiencing really dry summers and droughts the past several years. Do you anticipate that could probably have an effect on them?
Yeah, it certainly could. And it's probably most critical when they're, you know, 1 to 2 years after egg stage.
Right.
A lot of times, or maybe even a shorter period of time than that, a lot of times the youngest stage of a nymph or a larva is the most prone to desiccation, the most vulnerable to desiccation and drying out. And so, you know, years, for example, Japanese beetle, most of us that are gardeners or have flower beds really hate Japanese beetle. The good news is with those, their larvae are sort of naturally controlled during really dry summers. If we don't get 10 inches of rain from July through September, then the Japanese beetle larvae don't do very well in the soil when they're real young. I'm sure there's something similar for periodical and even our annual cicadas. If their nymphs are entering the ground in a really dry situation and the roots are dry, what they want to feed on, you know, then that could be problematic for them. It could reduce their populations, I imagine.
Okay, so now you told us about their life cycle. We're going to be seeing them emerge here shortly. Tell us a little bit about the difference between our annual cicadas that we see each summer versus the periodical. Is there a difference in the way they look?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, we have around 25 species of cicada in Missouri, but for most of us, the ones that are most recognizable are going to be those dog day species, the annual ones, and then, of course, the periodicals. Their differences as far as appearance go, you know, the periodical cicadas are about half the size of most of our annual cicadas. They're black and orange, and their wings are orange, and they have red eyes. They're very striking in color, the periodicals are. The annual cicadas, or the dog days that we see most often, they tend to be green and black. I've seen some that have really beautiful teal accents on them. They typically have white on their underside. And they can be quite large, up to probably three times larger than a periodical. But most of the ones I notice around mid-Missouri are about, you know, 3 inches long, with a body of about an inch and a half. So they're really beautiful insects. But compared to the periodical cicadas, they do look very different.
That's funny that the annual cicadas are bigger than the periodicals. For some reason, I had it in my head that the periodicals would be bigger.
Right. Well, they live a lot longer. So usually we equate, you know, living longer with being bigger, especially with trees and animals a lot of times. But in the insect world, that's not necessarily
the case.
Equated yet.
Right.
It's not necessarily the case at all.
So they're going to be feeding off of trees, correct?
For the most part, yeah. So they'll pick something woody, a tree or a shrub, and they will use they have a straw-like mouth part that they'll pierce into, you know, the tree, and they will suck sap from the xylem of the tree. So that's the water-conducting tissues. So yes, they do feed as adults. And when they're nymphs underground, they're also feeding on xylem of woody or, you know, possibly grass roots when they're really little, but usually they're going to pick woody species to feed from.
Okay. So they have a straw-like mouth. Can they bite you?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, there are some species with straw-like mouth parts that will stab you with their mouth parts. Cicadas are not really like that, though. I've been handling insects since I was about 5 years old. I love bugs. And so of all the ones I've ever handled, a cicada never once has bitten me in all this time. And I think there's a few reports out there that if you let one sit on your hand for long enough, it may get used to you and think, well, what is this? And kind of poke you with its mouth part just to sort of see what you are, if you are indeed a tree or not. But as far as biting goes, no, they don't bite. They don't have the ability to sting at all. And you may see on a female, she has a needle-like apparatus on her hind end called an ovipositor. And that's what she uses to lay her eggs, to pierce tree branches, make slits and lay eggs, but that's not something she can sting you with.
Okay, I'm glad that you cleared that up. Let's clear up a few more cicada myths. Since they're eating from trees, are they bad for trees?
That is a really good question. And, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at it. So as far as nature goes, you know, these cicadas evolved here, and any native tree has lived here long times, also evolved with cicadas. So I suspect this relationship is they've figured it out over time. Yeah. So, you know, what we expect to see during a periodical cicada year, like I mentioned earlier, the females will be laying eggs in pencil-sized twigs. So on a big, mature, healthy tree, you might see a lot of little brown patches across that canopy where females have laid eggs in those new twigs for the year. And so that may look terrible, but really it's just kind of it's the pruning. It's kind of like a light pruning every 13 years. This is something these trees are used to. It's really not a big deal. So those small twigs will fall off eventually, and really the tree should be fine in the long run, so long as it's otherwise healthy. The small trees that we might plant in our yard this spring, you know, they're starting to become available at the big box stores right now. Those trees could very much be negatively impacted by cicada egg laying. So they have far fewer twigs to lose. You know, a big tree has lots of twigs. It's not going to lose them all. But a small tree that is struggling to get established in your yard and put on a better root system, it needs all of its twigs. So yes, cicadas could be pretty damaging to new trees planted this year or in the last couple of years. So keep that in mind. If you have a new tree in your yard, you might think about netting it, putting pretty fine mesh net over it, go to, you know, a craft store and get some tooling or something like that, maybe put some burlap over it for the 4 weeks or so, 4 to 6 weeks that cicadas will be present. Or consider, if you're wanting to plant a tree this year, consider delaying that planting to the fall or to next year. You know, a lot of tree species are available in the fall at the box stores, and so you could delay it till then.
It's just strictly tree species and shrubs, woody shrubs, like you said. Any other type of plant is not going to be too susceptible.
Right. Yeah. Mostly the woody things. I don't think that we're going to have to worry about really anything else, just woody plants.
Another
myth I would love to get your expert opinion on is I had recently seen several articles online talking about cicadas' urine stream. And they had said that cicadas have a very strong stream of urine that can possibly spray you. Is there any truth to that?
So yes and no. I think that article that you specifically mentioned, there's been some research that's looked into this phenomenon with cicadas. And a lot of the information like this is related to species that come from Southeast Asia. And so when I looked into this for periodical cicadas or our annual cicadas in Missouri, what I found is kind of what I expected to find. You know, all the years that I've been around these insects, I've never experienced this issue. So I thought, well, have I just not seen this or is this not happening? Largely, this is not probably happening with our periodical or annual cicadas. So all insects that feed on xylem, They suck a lot of sap out of plants for not a lot of nutrients because that's the water conducting tissue. You know, there's not a lot of good nutrition in it. So they end up feeding on a lot of sap, but they have to get rid of that excess water, basically. And so they do essentially urinate or pee that excess xylem out. And so in the case of our periodical and annual cicadas, it's more of a drip. It's not more of an explosion of this honeydew or this sap excrement. So it's really nothing to be too concerned about. When I lived in the woods around a whole bunch of periodical cicadas 13 years ago, I never noticed this being an issue, even though there were thousands of these right outside my door. But what I've read is that, you know, if you go into the woods with a lot of periodical cicadas, then expect to maybe have a few drips here and there. It's really not urine like we would think of coming from a mammal. It's more like water. It really doesn't have much else in it besides water. So it's not as nasty as you might think. But expect a few drips. And if you go into Southeast Asia, one of the rainforests there with this particular species of cicada native to the area, what I read is you should take an umbrella because it's far more of a soaking than a drip. So
Can you imagine?
No, I can't. I don't think that's going to be an issue for us in Missouri, but it's something to keep in mind.
Like you say, we would remember that. That would be a memory you would not forget.
Yeah, I think that would be something that, especially folks like myself that are really interested in insects and, you know, I've made these observations throughout my childhood and into adulthood, and I've just never noticed that. And I thought that's quite strange if I've never noticed that.
And something else I'd love for you to speak on is that there has been a lot of media coverage regarding the emergence and that it's almost going to be a cicada apocalypse with the different broods and the areas. Speak on that.
So this actually started back in January. I got my first newspaper call back in January when it was like negative 10 outside saying the cicada apocalypse is coming. What can you tell us? And I'm like, wait a second. I don't think that's exactly what's happening. So the way a lot of these articles have been written does make it sound like this is a really unique year in that there will be so many cicadas, way more than normal. And in a way, it is a unique year because there are two broods that are emerging, brood 19 here in Missouri and about 14 or 15 other more southern and eastern states, and then brood 13, which is largely happening in northern Illinois, Wisconsin, places, you know, sort of upper Midwest. So these two broods, yes, they are coming out in the same year, but they are geographically separated. There's a 10-mile strip in central Illinois where they occur about 10 miles apart, but they don't technically overlap. With the new mapping apps and ways that people are tracking them, we may find that there is some overlap somewhere in there, but there's no overlap in Missouri at all. These are separate broods coming out in separate places, and we will just have the normal level of a whole bunch of cicadas in 2024.
You heard it here first, folks. Cicadas get a bad rap because they're so loud, right? Like they can be as loud as a chainsaw, correct?
Yeah, a chorus of singing males
could be as loud as about 100 decibels, which, yeah, that's a chainsaw, a gas-powered leaf blower, lawnmower that you're standing close to. Yeah, it's pretty loud.
And they're calling, that's strictly their mating call?
Uh-huh. Yep. That's the males that are calling, trying to attract the females. And then the females do make some clicking sounds with their wings that signifies to the male, yes, I like you, I'll mate with you. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's just the males that are calling.
Okay. So yeah, they can get a bad rap because they are so loud, because there are so many of them coming out too. But let's talk about why they're good. What are their benefits?
I love to talk about why they're good because, yes, people in general are pretty alarmed by cicadas. They're large. They're kind of clunky and derpy when they fly. I mean, they have lots of endearing qualities, but if you don't like insects, I can see why this would be sort of a scary event. Yeah. I get it. But, you know, from an ecology perspective, they're super cool. So they're aerating the soil, you know, they're tunneling down throughout the soil throughout their lifetime. And a lot of places, especially urban areas, our soils are really compacted and there's not much way that they're becoming aerated unless soil insects and animals are doing that. So that's a cool thing about them. When they die, you know, there's lots of nutrients in their bodies, so they decompose and they fertilize the soil, which is, you know, a good thing. They're also, you know, contributing as a food source to all kinds of animals. So there's lots of things that are going to do well this year because they will have periodical cicadas to eat. So some bird populations will probably do okay, especially turkeys, mm-hmm. wild turkey brood. They'll be eating them this spring. You know, the fish like them, so they can be good bait for anglers. But, you know, the fish will be all fat and happy because of cicadas. So lots of things eat these. And, you know, they're just really interesting, too, from an evolutionary standpoint. Gosh, there's hardly a more interesting insect in the world, to be honest. You know, they come out every 13 or 17 years, depending on the species. How did they do that? How do they know? How did this evolve? You know, probably due to predator evasion. But man, that's really complex stuff right there. And they only occur in the eastern half of the United States. They're nowhere else in the world. Periodical cicadas are unique to the eastern U.S., which is super cool. We have this crazy interesting insect that only occurs in, you know, our kind of little part of the world. So I think they're just super awesome.
We're special in that way, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's all over the world, species occur, and there's really interesting things that occur in each place. But this for us is one of those really cool things.
What can we do? You kind of touched on it earlier with maybe avoiding pesticides and insecticides in your lawn care, but what are some other ways that we can help them?
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a big effort during the emergences of broods, you know, now and in the near future to map them and try to study them a little bit more and see like which species are really occurring where, how are the populations doing, you know, if there's any kind of climate change issues that are going on with their populations, because they don't come out very often, they're really hard to study. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think one of the things that you can do as a community scientist to contribute to this effort, there's an app called Cicada Safari that is, you know, going to be widely used. iNaturalist is another thing that can probably be used. But Cicada Safari will allow you to take pictures of the ones that you're seeing so that the species can be identified and then, you know, put a location to that. And then it'll be a point on the map. And I think that that would be really helpful for Missourians to do that. Even if you live in a big city and you think lots of people are doing this, doesn't matter. We don't even know the distribution in, say, St. Louis, how these are distributed throughout the greater St. Louis area. So the more people that download this app and are recording these in their yards, I mean, the better information we're going to have for science. So that's really awesome. And yeah, again, avoid pesticide use in your yard as much as possible, particularly the insecticides, because that just has such a negative impact on the soil organisms in your yard. And I think most people use that to try to prevent ticks or chiggers or maybe fleas in their yard. But really, a lot of the insecticides that are used are not that effective on those particular pests, mm-hmm. and they have more detriment to other things that are natively and naturally occurring there. So yeah, just keep that in mind.
Whenever I was younger, I had a little kiddie pool, you know, out in my backyard, and I was swimming, and I remember thinking to myself, man, these cicadas are so loud. One was right on the back of my head, Robbie. Didn't realize that it was obviously a male calling right on the back of my head. And so I feel like almost everybody has like a funny cicada memory or story.
There's a lot of people that have very core memories with like one cicada experience. You know, I don't have a specific bad experience for sure. The first time I remember seeing them was probably in the 1998 emergence, I believe we did have a double brood that year in the part of the state that I grew up in Southwest Missouri. We had both 13 and 17 years coming out then. So there were a bunch of them. And I grew up float fishing a little creek called Flat Creek. And I remember them just being in the water and being everywhere. You know, it was my first recollection. You know, I probably would have been early high school, late middle school at that point. And it was like, wow, this is crazy. And so I think I have some in my collection from that time period. But yeah, it was like the first, oh, wow, these are cool. I've never really thought of these before, because the other time they would have emerged, I would have been, you know, zero or one, you know, very young at that time. So, yeah, really cool to realize what you're seeing for the first time. And it wasn't until 2010 or 2011 emergence that I actually appreciated them. But yeah, I do have that core memory.
Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to end on about cicadas or anything you'd like people to know?
I think instead of being afraid of them or, you know, just scared of them in general, you know, annoyed by them, because they're going to be calling for 4 to 6 weeks once they start emerging, let's appreciate them this year. You know, let's try to appreciate all of the nature we can possibly appreciate. But these especially, they're only out for a short period of time. Let's just see it for the really cool thing that it is. And maybe we got to keep our windows shut to get some sleep at night during the early part of the spring or summer. But, you know, let's celebrate this. Let's call this cool. There's some cicada recipes out there, which some people are willing to try. Others are not. I understand that. You don't need to eat it to appreciate it. But let's have fun with this. Let's see this for the really neat thing that it is. And I bought cicada earrings for all my entomology girlfriends. So we're going to be rocking these gold cicada earrings this year. And us nerdy insect people are really excited about this. So I hope that if everybody just has a fraction of that excitement and appreciation, we can really celebrate this event in Missouri.
There's a lot happening this year, the solar eclipse and the cicada emergence.
Right. There's so many cool things going on. So let's not be annoyed by it. Let's say, hey, yeah, this is cool. Let's do this.
As Robbie mentioned, the U.S. will see two broods emerge this year, brood 19, which is the one we'll see in Missouri, and brood 13, which will appear in parts of Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and possibly in parts of Michigan. Brood 13 is a brood of 17-year cicadas, but will most likely not overlap geographically with brood 19, which is what we'll have in Missouri. But one cool fact is that the last time these broods emerged in the same year was in 1803. That was when Thomas Jefferson was president, and the same year the Louisiana Purchase was signed. How do periodical cicada nymphs know it's time to emerge after 13 or 17 years? One theory is the nymphs' bodies may sense seasonal changes in the chemical composition of tree juices they eat from roots, typically in the spring when trees leaf out. A sort of molecular clock in the cicadas is triggered by each leaf out period, and once it's been triggered 13 or 17 times, the nymph will emerge the next time the soil warms to the trigger temperature. This theory was corroborated in 2007 in Ohio when many periodical cicadas emerged a year early. The area had experienced warm January temperatures that caused many trees to bud out early, but then they got zapped by a hard freeze in February and they had to leaf out again that spring. The two leaf out periods apparently triggered the cicada's molecular clocks, which counted it as two quote-unquote years. Numerous annual cicada species occur in Missouri. Here's a few you may recognize. The first one is the Robinson cicada, which consists of slow pulses. Another common species you may hear is the scissors grinder cicada. The buzzsaw cicada has a rough, high-pitched buzz and will only call in the morning. And finally, here's the call of a periodical cicada. And here's what hundreds of them sound like. This was a topic I've been wanting to discuss on the podcast for a while, and I'm so happy we were able to learn more from Robbie, that we put some of those cicada myths to rest, and hopefully gave everyone a new perspective on these fascinating insects. Learn more on our website at missouriconservation.org. Thanks again to forest entomologist Robbie Deerhoff, to Nature Boost producer Peg Kraft, and to you for listening to another episode of Nature Boost. I'm Jill Pritchard with the Missouri Department of Conservation, encouraging you to get your daily dose of the outdoors.